Welcome to Local Talk Monday on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events, and places in Central Iowa. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour, with station manager and engineer Mike Murphy. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm good today. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, but how was your weekend?
Oh, it was pretty eventful. Of course, Saturday morning is the farmer's market. And we went to the senior variety show on Saturday afternoon, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
Oh, super. Yeah.
And you know, that was really nice. And then last night went to the Roosevelt concert series.
Oh, my gosh. Right here in downtown Ames, yep. Where you sit in the grass and,
yep.
And hear some music. And was it Sun Perusho?
Yeah. Yeah. They're kind of, I would call them Andean, I mean, but they're kind of Latin fusion. I mean, they played Andean music, which everyone knows with a pan pipe sound, but they also did Santana and Cuban music. And, you know, it was a pretty, and these guys are out at Des Moines. And it was their first time playing in Ames. And yeah,
it's really a great good. Venue. I think next Sunday is going to be Bob Dorr and the Blue Band.
That's right.
At Roosevelt, a summer concert series that is a really great destination for Sunday evenings. Well, around the hinterland where I live, there was elderberry canning. It's elderberry season. I had a farmer friend who came and scooped out a frog pond for me in like 1994. And there was one elderberry in the pasture that I made sure I put some cloth around it so he'd see it and wouldn't take it out. And from that one elderberry, I have elderberries everywhere now.
Wow.
And for an antioxidant, it's right here. And,
right.
You know, it's been part of my regime through this COVID situation.
Yeah, me too.
Just focus on the immune system. And these elderberries are right here. So we did some canning over the weekend, and it was good. And there is a full slate of Local Talk guests in the wings, so to speak, on this 22nd day of August, 2022. It's currently 59 degrees, and Iowa is reveling in the rain over the weekend. It's going to be sunny and beautiful today with a high of 84, down to 62 this evening. And that is the forecast for the rest of the week. In the 80s, in the 60s, good sleeping weather. And there is possible rain again next Friday, so we will see. Gene Eels with the eResources Group will be with us later in the hour. At first, let's welcome Dennis Hart with a summary of the news last week from newspapers throughout Iowa.
Predictions about more very hot days to come in Iowa. The state's corn and soybean crops suffering right now. And former Vice President Mike Pence comes to the Iowa State Fair. All part of what made news around the state last week. First, all that heat. A new study found that Iowa is likely to see more hot days where the temperature reaches 106 degrees over the next 30 years. That part of an extreme heat model created by a research and technology firm called the First Street Foundation. The model predicts that 50 countries next year will experience an extreme danger day of heat, and more than 1,000 counties in the United States will experience days of over 125 degrees by the year 2053. This so-called extreme heat belt stretches from the northern Texas and Louisiana borders to Illinois, Indiana, and into Wisconsin. The top five metro areas with the most neighborhoods expected to experience these extreme danger days are St. Louis, Kansas City, Memphis, Tulsa, and Chicago. The top Iowa counties likely to see the greatest increase in heat waves over the next three decades are Fremont, Lee, and Van Buren counties. Meanwhile, in the here and now, there's more bad news for Iowa agriculture. The U.S. Department of Agriculture reported last week that the percentage of the state's corn and soybeans rated good or excellent had gone down, the result of drought conditions that are getting worse. The latest USDA report showed 66% of the state's corn crop was rated good or excellent last week, compared to 73% the week before. 63% of the soybean crop was rated good or excellent, down from 71% the week before. All this taking place the same week a big storm blew its way through the Des Moines metro Friday afternoon, bringing with it large hail and heavy rain. The hail caused broken windshields and car damage. That rain also fell on former Vice President Mike Pence as he toured the Iowa State Fair on Friday afternoon. He was joined by a cadre of Iowa's Republican political candidates, including U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, along with 2nd District GOP incumbent Marionette Miller Meeks, 4th District GOP incumbent Randy Feenstra, and 3rd District GOP candidate Zach Nunn. Pence said that calls to defund the FBI in the wake of the search of former President Trump's Florida compound are, in his words, just as wrong as calls to defund the police. He also said, again in his words, "We can demand that they reveal why the search warrant was executed against the residence of a former president of the United States without demeaning the rank-and-file men and women of the FBI." Meanwhile, last week, U.S. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai, and Iowa Congresswoman Cindy Axne met with state farm and ag leaders at a farm near Woodward. Farmers urged the trade leaders to ease tariffs on fertilizers in an effort to cut their costs to grow next year's corn, soybeans, and other crops. They said the price of fertilizer, seed, and other products needed to raise crops is exploding. American farmers rely on nitrogen and other fertilizer imports from China, Russia, Canada, and Morocco to grow their crops. Some of those imports face U.S. tariffs. Now for the coronavirus in Iowa. Health officials said the number of people hospitalized with it had gone down 24% in the past week. There were 224 people hospitalized with the virus in Iowa last week, down from 323 the week before. There were also 4,921 new coronavirus cases in the state last week, the third straight week that new reported cases have gone down. And there were 32 new coronavirus-related deaths reported in Iowa. The state's death toll from the virus is now 9,882 since the pandemic started. There was also a report last week that a court had appointed a receiver to oversee 8 Iowa senior care facilities, including 2 in the Des Moines Metro, after those facilities reportedly missed rent payments to their landlord. The move comes in a case filed on behalf of the 8 business entities representing the owners of the properties, who allege that the companies operating the facilities failed to pay a combined $133,000 in rent owed for July. The decision affects the Urbandale and Newton Healthcare Centers in the Des Moines Metro, the Eagle Point Healthcare Center in Clinton, the Keosauqua Healthcare Center, the Countryside Healthcare Center in the Four Seasons Retirement Community in Sioux City, the Sigourney Healthcare Center, and the Keota Healthcare Center. Also last week, word that the state's jobless rate had fallen to a 3-year low. The unemployment rate in May dropped to 2.5%, its lowest rate since May of 2019. At the same time, there was word that the red-hot Des Moines housing market is cooling off. The Des Moines Area Association of Realtors released new figures that showed 1,452 homes were sold in the region in July. That's down 15% from the 1,700 sold in July of last year. The median home price in July in the metro was about $273,000, down from the $280,000 it was in June. In another story, word that state regulators are poised to hold a scheduling conference that will guide the rest of the permit process for Summit Carbon Solutions, which wants to build about 700 miles of liquid carbon pipeline in the state. That upcoming conference will let the company, affected landowners, and others talk about deadlines for testimonies and interventions. As of last Monday, Summit had submitted lists of landowners who have refused to grant easements for the project and whose land might be subject to eminent domain. Those lists include parcels in 11 counties: Cherokee, Chickasaw, Crawford, Fremont, Greene, Hancock, Ida, Lyon, Plymouth, Pottawatomie, and Sioux. There was also word that the State Utilities Board was set to finish its investigation into the disposal of wind turbines, now that a prominent blade stockpile has been removed and other state officials are monitoring the investigation. The Utilities Board started looking into the disposal of wind turbines in January of 2020, after a company, Global Fiberglass Solutions, had been stockpiling old turbine blades at several Iowa locations for years, most visibly along U.S. Highway 35 near Ellsworth. Wind turbine blades are difficult to bury at landfills or recycle. They are made of reinforced fiberglass, they often are more than 100 feet long, and they're tough to crush. There was also word that 6 adolescents in Iowa and Nebraska were safe after a human trafficking investigation. Federal, state, and local police in Iowa and Nebraska freed the children as part of a nationwide law enforcement campaign called Operation Cross Country. There was no word on where the adolescent victims were found or where they were from. Meanwhile, a Des Moines City Council member sued by 2 city police officers is now suing them. Indira Shoemaker alleges they used force unconstitutionally in arresting her and others during a protest 2 summers ago outside the state capitol. Earlier, she had been charged with assaulting an officer. Two officers sued her and five others, accusing them of assault. Stay tuned. And in downtown Des Moines last week, several glass panes on a well-known sculpture at the Papa John Sculpture Park were shattered in an apparent act of vandalism. Six glass panes were shattered on the Olafur Eliasson sculpture known as the Panoramic Awareness Pavilion. That's a popular rainbow-colored ring near the park's southern edge on Locust Street. It's comprised of 23 glass panels, each weighing 1,200 pounds. No estimate on the repair cost or a timeline to fix the damage. Meanwhile, last week, word that a Dallas County man was suing Panda Express, alleging he ingested shards of broken glass in his meal. 51-year-old Randy Hartley, who is a Des Moines firefighter, says he visited a Panda Express in West Des Moines, bought two entrees, took the food home, and bit down on a jagged shard of glass that was about the size of a quarter. He says it chipped his tooth. Hartley says he called Panda Express, which offered to exchange his meal but did not offer any explanation for the glass. He says he received a follow-up call from someone from Panda Express who told him she had contacted the West Des Moines restaurant and ordered its immediate shutdown. Some sad news from the Blank Park Zoo in Des Moines last week. A beloved sea lion named Addie, who loved waving at fans and jumping into the water, has died. Addie had been born in the wild and was found beached in Los Angeles County in 2013. She was malnourished and had vision problems. The Blank Park Zoo gave her a home in 2014, and she later had cataract surgery with help from sea lion specialists. She was thought to be about 10 years old when she passed away. There was also word last week that a recent analysis of bees, yes, bees, found living on the Luther College campus in Decorah, showed seven new species that had never been recorded in the entire state of Iowa. This after Luther College planted more native flowers to attract pollinators. The new species have technical names I won't even try to pronounce, but among them, in words even I can understand, is a giant rosin bee, a parasitic leafcutter bee, and a cherry minor bee. So now, we all know. And one more quick note. Word last week that the Farmer's Almanac has come out with its winter weather predictions for these parts, and the operative word is frigid. The almanac is describing this winter's weather around here, a hibernation zone, glacial and snow-filled. The almanac says frigid temperatures will permeate the area, and that its readers around here will be, in the almanac's words, shaking and shivering. And that is your summary of the past week's news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, suddenly feeling a bit chilled for some reason, but hoping to warm up by tonight at 7, when I'll be here with Laura Bellin for Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything having to do with politics in Iowa. Then I'll stroll right back here to Local Talk this coming Friday morning, when I'll report on what makes news in Ames. I'd be honored if you came along as well. Until we're all together again, go ahead. Have a safe, healthy, and happy week. Thank you.
you, Dennis Hart, with your week in the news. And yes, have a safe, healthy, and happy week. And the music interlude was Cannot Change It All by Ferris and Jason Romero. And in their words, man is best when he does not know the riches at his feet. It's all right with us here. It's on our minds a lot, how to be a loving and beloved part of the ecosystem. So let's welcome Lauren Livingston. She's the communication director of the Alzheimer's Association. Good morning, Lauren.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's just great to have you with us here on a Monday morning. Are you located here in Ames?
I'm in the Des Moines area, actually, so pretty close.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, tell us about your association, please.
Sure. So the Alzheimer's Association is a national organization. We're all across the United States, and we do have the Iowa chapter here that we serve all of Iowa, including the Ames area, and we provide local care and support services for families and caregivers who are going through an Alzheimer's journey with their loved one. We provide support groups for caregivers to come together and share advice and find that support with others who are going through something similar, as well as education programs to help people understand more about the disease and how it progresses and things like that. And then we also, of course, a big component to our organization is funding research so we can find future treatments and ultimately the cure someday for Alzheimer's and dementia.
Yes, so the funding research is quite intriguing, but you mentioned the journey. How is it that Alzheimer's has become such a focus on our culture? I think growing up, I'm probably older than you, but you know, we didn't hear about Alzheimer's. There were mental, well, I guess a term for it was dementia, but it wasn't diagnosed as it is now. You refer to it as a disease?
Yes, you're exactly right. There used to be not very much known about the disease or dementia and Alzheimer's in general, and also there was a stigma around it too, so people didn't feel as comfortable talking about it. And as we have done more research over the years and learned a lot more about the disease, there have been more diagnoses. And right here, just in Iowa, there are 66,000 individuals living with the disease, and it is the sixth leading cause of death in the United States. So it does impact so, so many people. And it's almost hard to come across someone who hasn't been affected in one way or another with a loved one or a friend who has been living or has passed with Alzheimer's. So it affects so many people, and more people are talking about it because of that very reason that there's so many people affected by it, and that there's just more and more known about it every day.
Right. We don't have to fear the unknown with organizations like your association that can, well, address the facts. And 66,000 cases, that's 66,000 families and 66,000 mm-hmm. communities. You see how your statement that it affects us all is so apropos, that we're better off understanding it. And now the research, what are the research opportunities that you referred to?
Yeah, so there's research going on worldwide, and the Alzheimer's Association is the largest funder of research after the National Institutes of Health for Alzheimer's and dementia. So right now we're funding over $310 million in research worldwide. So we're funding research projects to find out more about the causes of the disease, more about developing treatments to slow the progression, finding cures, and also finding more about the risk factors and how eventually we could prevent the disease in the future. So there's millions and millions of dollars going into research from the government, from our association, other organizations like ours, which is fantastic. And the money that is raised for research comes right from individuals in our communities, like in Ames, from the Walk to End Alzheimer's, which is our biggest event coming up here this fall, and other events that we have going on throughout the year.
Oh, let's emphasize that event. And you say there's a walk that'll be scheduled?
Yes. So the Walk to End Alzheimer's, it happens in 600 communities across the U.S. So it's all over the place. And here in Iowa, we have 19 walks across the state. The walk in Ames is coming up on October 15th, which is a Saturday. It's at the CPMI Event Center. And you can come at 8 a.m. to get registered. We'll have some activities going on before the walk. And then there'll be really nice. We call it a promise garden ceremony where people who are there that day, we have different colored flowers that people hold up to represent why they are there to walk, whether they have a loved one living with the disease, someone who has passed, whether they're a caregiver, or they're just there to support the cause in general. And then we have a 2-mile walk. And leading up to that, our walkers are fundraising. They start teams. They do different fundraisers. You start a Facebook fundraiser. That's a really easy way to do it. And then we all come together on October 15th.
Oh, and what was that destination? Where is it going to be located?
It is the CPMI Event Center. It's kind of over by the Provisions restaurant.
Oh, Provisions. That's like that new area off Elwood Drive there in mm-hmm. South Ames. Uh-huh. Well, this is fantastic. Maybe just to kind of drill down a little bit further, is the federal dollars, are those like matching funds, or does that kind of trigger these opportunities for people mm-hmm. to contribute, have a walk, and then basically get a pot of money that could be matched?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's lots of different opportunities like that. So the Alzheimer's Association, we raise funds through sponsors and our walkers. They raise money that goes to the Alzheimer's Association, and then the Alzheimer's Association provides that money to different grants for research across the world. And then the National Institutes of Health, the federal dollars, every year they increase the amount of funding that they're providing for Alzheimer's research. I think it's up to somewhere around almost $400 million a year that they are funding for Alzheimer's research. And that really started in 2011. The National Institutes of Health started providing that funding for Alzheimer's research. And every single year, they've increased the amount that they have been providing for research. So there's lots of money going to research out there, which is great.
Yeah, which is great. So could you walk us through... How do people contact you, or are you working with medical facilities? How's that initial contact proceed for you at the association?
There's lots of different ways you can reach out to us. We do have local offices. Our closest one to Ames is in Des Moines. You can visit us at alz.org/Iowa, and you can find the different phone numbers for all of our offices, our main email address. If you want to email us, you can find us on Facebook. You can send us a message there. And then we also have a free 24/7 helpline, which is staffed by trained clinicians and people in the field of dementia healthcare and social workers as well, to provide advice and support for people who might have questions if they have they're caring for a loved one in their home and they're doing some type of behavior that the caregiver isn't sure how to approach their loved one or handle that behavior. They can call up our helpline and they will provide lots of support. They can answer questions about where to find different care facilities in their area or how to sign up for one of the association programs, like education programs. And that number is
1-800-272-3900. 272-3900. Yeah. Well, Lauren, you're providing, I guess a term would be a safety net for mm-hmm. our listeners can kind of process the information you're sharing and realizing that there are people in our society that are available. How is your staffing? Are you needing people or do you rely on volunteers to answer your phones?
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
Yes, we do have many, many volunteers throughout the state, which is great. And they help plan our walks. They help, do those education programs and support groups. So the volunteers are really what help drive the organization forward. Staff-wise, we have about just over 10 staff members across the state. We are looking for a couple staff members in the North Central Iowa area, as well as Sioux City area. So you can find those opportunities on our website if you're interested in joining our team. But yeah, our staff and volunteers, we work every single day to answer those questions, to just be there for the people in the community who aren't really sure where else to turn when they're starting their dementia journey with their loved one, or they face some of those different challenges along the way.
And so what I'm hearing, you know, as we were growing up in another generation earlier, it was almost an unmentionable, or mm-hmm. it was awkwardness, where you seem to be just putting it right out into a proper focus, where mm-hmm. it's better to just learn the facts and proceed from there and not worry about mm-hmm. the future that basically becomes a day at a time anyway.
Exactly, yes. It's really important to talk about it, to know the different warning signs, so you can, the earlier you catch it, just like anything else with health, the earlier you can detect it, the better that it is to get that early diagnosis. There's more treatment options available earlier in the disease. And also, it just gives you more time to plan and understand what is ahead, rather than putting it off.
Oh, sure. It's not going to fix itself. So mm-hmm. we're engaging now in an area. So early detection, is there medication, or what is it that can early detection assist in the long term?
Sure. So there are a few treatments out there. There was a new one that came out just about a little over a year ago, and that was the first drug to slow the progression of the disease. Unfortunately, it is not widely covered by Medicare and Medicaid at this point. However, there are treatments that are in the clinical trial phases, in the final phases, that should be coming up for FDA approval fairly soon, that will eventually be available for people that are showing great promise in slowing the progression of the disease. So there are some treatments out there right now, but there are even better ones coming down the pipeline. And the earlier you have that diagnosis, if you have that diagnosis now, you have more of a chance to get into clinical trials where you could try out these different treatments, or when they do become available, you'll already have that diagnosis and you won't have to jump through those hoops of getting the diagnosis first before you could get one of the new treatments.
So our Affordable Care Act has new horizons, possibly,
yes,
to address. Am I overlooking anything, or is there anything else, Lauren, that we should weave into this conversation?
I'd say just the kind of top two things is how to find us, and I know I touched on that already, but even if you're not ready to talk to someone directly about anything, if you're just curious about the disease, our website is a wealth of information. You can find out about the disease, what the warning signs are, what to expect with the different steps. If you're a caregiver, there are so many resources out there for caregivers. So if you visit alz.org/Iowa, you can find all of the local resources, a list of programs, like those education programs and support groups I've mentioned that are near you, as well as all of that library of information on the disease. And you can find out more about what kind of research is going on too on our website if you're interested in that.
Very much so, very interested. And the walk will be October 15th. We'll put it on the calendar, 8 a.m. at SPMI Center here in Ames. Well, Lauren Livingston, thank you so much for being on Local Talk. Thanks for sharing your very valuable message.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great that we can spread the information.
Thank you, Lauren. That's Lauren Livingston. Thank you. And it is 31 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to KHOI Community Radio on 89.1 FM, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum, your Monday Local Talk host this week. With engineer Mike Murphy, let's welcome Jean Eales, eResources Group.
Good morning, Pat.
Yes, good morning. Tell us about your eResources Group. When did you get started, and what is your main focus for your project?
eResources Group got started in 1997 and it's transformed several times over the years. And the focus has always been something to do with education and the environment. And so we've I had a business partner who retired in 2007, and I've just been carrying on. And when it becomes a group, it's because I've hired in subcontractors who have particular skills, and we have a lot, great time working together. So we have different group projects going on at any given time. Always something to do with the environment. And of probably the last 15 years or so, I've really focused in on agricultural conservation. That's always been a little part of what I've done, but I really focused in on that, working particularly with women who own farmland but may not be actively involved in the conservation programs. So
you're the go-between. You know about the programs, and you know how to guide people to realize their, sustainable agricultural goals.
Yeah, what they really can do. It seems like it helps to have kind of an intermediate step, somebody that can translate some of the things and encourage people. So I'm kind of in a never land where I'm not really delivering the programs. I'm not the program person to sign up. I'm not selling any of the programs. I'm not selling anything in particular. But there's also a lot of people that just don't even know that there's help, or that they should do something, or that there's an urgent need to do something. So I'm also really excited about helping people who don't have anything, think they don't have anything to do with agriculture, help them know what they're seeing on the Iowa landscape. That's always been an interesting challenge, because people have maybe some misimpressions about what's going on out in the rural areas. So That's another part of what I like to do.
I know you were involved with a lot of early prairie plantings here in the state as a naturalist there with the Hamilton County Conservation Board. And yeah, so immediately when you said interpreting what people are seeing, they accused us of going overgrown in our weed patch areas and say, no, you, with confidence and patience, it'll be a prairie someday.
Exactly. And
so it really kind of started as that, where people get the wrong idea. I wish I could see more cover crops. How do cover crops fit into your overall agricultural scene?
Cover crops and no-till, hand in hand, the two practices really go together, is such an important step that we need to take to make sure that our soils are going to be able to weather the weather that we're having. It makes a huge difference if our, whatever it is that we're raising, doesn't matter whether it's small grain or corn and soybeans or livestock, everything benefits when the soil is in better condition and droughts are a little less harsh, flooding is a little less harsh, plants are healthier, they're less susceptible to disease. So there's a whole host of benefits when you get cover crops out there to start beefing up the soil, to start feeding what I'm going to call the micro herd of microbes in the soil. So everybody that has soil has a micro herd. Fortunately, you don't have to name all of them, but
growing up, I think I heard about the minerals in the soil. So the alternative, I guess, is kind of what we see in a lot of the acreage in Iowa, where corn and beans, and then it's black dirt for a number of months over the winter. And then in the spring, it'll come in and till it. And a term that I'm not familiar with in the modern concepts is the tilth of the soil. Growing up, we talked about the tilth, and that was adding the organic matter. So the no-till and the cover crops, they improve the soil health?
In so many different ways. Just about any way you can measure soil, from picking it up and handling it to seeing how fast a rain will soak in, infiltrate, how fast will that infiltrate into the soil. To if you're flying over our crops this time of year, you can see the places that are stressed, where the crop is stressed. They're yellow. Even if you can't see it from the road, if you're flying over and you can see that, either stress from being too dry, not having the right minerals and nutrients in the soil, to just a lack of soil. A lot of times those circles that we see in the field are where the soil, topsoil, the good topsoil, has eroded down. It's gone downhill, and it's not something that's easy to put back. But we can do a lot with cover crops to improve all of those spots. So it's kind of a neat deal. Once you get onto them, they're pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that you can see if you're out in the rural area is you can see what we would call spray planes, the planes that will apply maybe insecticide earlier in the year or other things. Now, from now on, if you see planes in the air, crop dusters, they're probably applying cover crop seed to the fields. They're flying over. They switch out the tank. They fly over low, and they're dropping cover crop seed down in between the corn and the soybeans that are still in the field, and that gets the seed on the ground, maybe germinates if we get a little rain, and starts to grow and helps feed the microherd, feed the bacteria. Because if you think about it, pretty much from now till harvest, the plant roots are putting as much energy into the filling out the beans or filling out the corn as possible, but they're kind of also dying, you know, as it gets closer to harvest, that kind of shuts off. And so the microherd, the bacteria in the soil, start to get a little hungry. So by putting cover crops roots out there, then they've got something that'll keep them going. And the cool thing about having a healthy microherd, it's like your own gut bacteria. It's like what we have in us that helps our immune system respond quickly. The microbes in the soil do the same kind of thing for the plants. So if the corn plants or the bean plants have a disease or an insect or something is coming along, they go, "Whoa, oh my gosh, we got problems. Quick, send in some help." And the microbe and the plant hormones that go out can help draw in things that make that plant healthier. So you don't need, it's not as susceptible to the insult. Just like when we're healthy, our body kind of wards off most things. Same thing, it can be true. But when we till and don't feed those microbes, puts our soils and our plants and anything we want to grow, from your garden to something that you want to sell, puts everything in jeopardy. And it's gotten worse than we realized. It's gotten way worse than we recognized. For a lot of years, we thought we were doing okay, and wow, we've really messed up the soils. They're very, very degraded, and you can't see that when you're driving by.
Well, you can see, as you mentioned, the yellowing in certain spots. Coming into town yesterday, I was driving down my gravel road, and I was noticing the corn on one side of the road, you know, a stalk every 4 inches or so. It was just like metered right along on one side. And then on the other side, the first row was kind of yellowed up next to the road. And I thought, I wonder if the yellowed corn didn't get the big hit of fertilizer or something for whatever reason. It was pretty graphic. Corn on the left was yellow. Corn on the right was nice and green.
There can be a reason for that. That it could be, you know. Of course, I couldn't diagnose it. I'm not an agronomist, but I do know that there can be something called the edge effect. And I have to give a shout out to one of my local farmers that helps me understand what I'm seeing when I'm driving along. And when there's 3 or 4 weeks of super dry weather in July, August, there is a depressurization when there's wind, dry wind, especially if it's not protected from the other side, that'll dry out a few rows into a field because it doesn't have the humidity that is helping. It's just a kind of a funny edge effect. So it's hard to know if the ones that you're seeing didn't get the stuff they needed or if there was something else going on or, you know, it's that weather that we're fighting to try and get things to go. So one of the other things that farmers are talking about, and this is another one of those things you might hear somebody say, tip back for the corn, because of that super hot weather we had right when it was pollinating, a lot of the corn got cooked. I mean, the pollen, the silks, et cetera, it was too hot. And so the ears didn't fill all the way out. They didn't get pollinated all the way out, and they're not going to fill all the way out. And so farmers are seeing in many places, not everywhere, but many places, maybe the top one-third of the ear is missing. So you don't see that from the road. You can drive by and say, oh, my goodness, we're just going to have a bin-busting corn crop this year. And we might. Some varieties are a little better able to handle the timing when they planted it. Might not be that case all over the place. So watching some of those things, so that's what farmers are really concerned about, is making sure that they plant early to avoid that time when pollen gets cooked. Well, we used to be able to kind of predict that a little more reliably. We used to have a climate and a weather pattern that was a little bit more reliable. So when you get that corn in the ground, isn't so critical. Now everybody's in a panic in the spring. That's why we have, you know, people worried about rain, cold weather, push things late this year. It was a real challenge. And I always worry about farmers' mental health when we have those kind of weather challenges that are much more extreme for our crops now. So getting that soil in better shape with cover crops and no-till is so key. It will help everybody relax a little bit.
What's the cover crop that you like to suggest to people to get started?
There's two different things. One is if you're going to be planting the field to corn, one cover crop that's real easy to get started with is to have oats flowing onto the soybeans ahead of the corn. And those will winter kill, so they don't live all the way through the winter. A better one is cereal rye. That's another good beginning one. And people are getting better at using that ahead of soybeans because they've got a little more, that window when you plant soybeans isn't quite as frenetic as it is when they plant corn. So it's possible to be able to make sure that rye is dead. And there are different ways. There's pathways for organic farmers and there's pathways for others. And no, cover crops does not mean you have to use more pesticide, more herbicide. They just change the timing. So they're going to use something to kill the weeds anyway. They may just change when they do that application. So it doesn't have to be an extra. That's sometimes a misconception people have.
Well, as always, we're running short on time, but have workshops that we should put on people's calendars?
I don't have any on the books right now, but if people want to check my e-resources group website, again, I'm not selling anything I'm talking about, but I am selling those possibilities for workshops. So anyway, check out my
website. I know
you
were very active in the spring.
Yep. I'm getting ready to have some. So.
Oh, sure. Well, keep us in the loop because you mentioned timing, and the timing of your message is so important in the 21st century, particularly when we look at the crops in 2023. And keep up the good work. What am I missing, Jean Eales?
I was just going to say, I also put out an email. I hate to call it a newsletter because it's not pretty and it's not well edited and stuff. But if somebody goes to my website and wants to email me and get on my email list, I just email out to people that want information about what's going on, kind of like what we talked about today.
Yeah.
And they can email me from there, ask to be on the Kibbles and Tidbits is my email.
Uh-huh.
It's not a fancy list. It's just an email. It's long and people still seem to want to stay on. So anyway.
Well, I know you're very active at dancing at Lake Robbins. So,
yes.
I wish I'd have thought about bringing that up earlier, but I love you when you share the images of you and your husband, Chad, down at Lake Robbins. So, keep dancing and keep your message flowing. Jean Eales.
Very good.
With the
e-resources
group right up there by Webster City. Thank you so much.
Good. Thank you very much, Pat.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Just a little bit more of Ferris and Jason Romero. There, I love that music that they've been providing us today. So, hi, Cornelia Flora is with us. Hi, Cornelia.
Hi. Good morning.
Yeah, great to have you with us. And I know you through KHOI membership. You're one of our key people here at the station, and I believe you're retired from Iowa State University.
Retiring is always basically means they don't send you a paycheck, but I'm working on two research projects via Iowa State University, but that are started at Iowa State University, but come through. I run my grants through Kansas State University, and today I'm starting teaching a class for Great Plains IDEA.
Okay.
After class. So retirement is relative.
And you've always had some time for KHOI, and you've been a part of the station. And we're celebrating our 10th anniversary.
Yes, this is so exciting. And I think that KHOI, just by your last guest, shows what KHOI can do that is really part of community radio, which is explaining the how and the why of good agricultural practices, good environmental practices, good ways to treat each other that relate to us locally here in the middle of Iowa.
And your work has worldwide significance. You're a sociologist.
Yes, I'm a rural sociologist with a strong emphasis these days on both agriculture and environment. Last month, I was in Cambodia as part of the evaluation team of the Sustainable Intensification Innovation Lab. And people came there from where our projects are, which are a number of U.S. universities. And we had people from Bangladesh, Sierra Leone, Burkina Faso, as well as, of course, Cambodia.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't realize that you're traveling more now. I guess COVID has diminished to the point where there can be conferences and activities on the other side of the planet. And you bring that right back to Ames. You bring that right here to KHOI Community Radio.
Well, we're really privileged to be part of KHOI Radio and to be part of PHIL. It's so interesting to compare kinds of things. I mean, one of the issues we were talking about were cover crops.
Oh, okay.
This was just disgusting. You do it, it's just very good.
Well, and also we had a woman on earlier today talking about the Alzheimer's Association, Lauren Livingston. And she brought such a wealth of knowledge to a topic that, you know, I guess we're all exposed to the topic of Alzheimer's and affected in different levels, some more so than others. But yet she brought a message of assistance and like a safety net. Sometimes I think of KHOI as a bit of a community safety net when it comes time to have things that people need can benefit from. What better venue than a community radio station to provide those perspectives? You know what I mean?
I think that's absolutely true. And one of the things that has increased my enthusiasm for KHOI is observing community radio in South America, where people set up small radio stations that deal with community issues. And that is so important because it allows people to communicate with each other. It allows people who can't get together in person, but to hear what their neighbors are doing, to understand what is going on, is just really, really important.
Well, and I think there was a metaphor that Gene Eales compared to the soil tilth or the health of our soil is almost right down to the health of microbiology going on in our intestinal system. You know, she made it seem like what's happening in Webster County near her home, in some regards, could be directed right back to her kitchen table. And it all started right at the home front. And it does seem like we're trying to personalize something that is becoming more and more corporate in structure. By that, we seem to be losing our local newspapers and local entertainment outreach. It's all being provided through the internet, and we're kind of losing that grassroots, that basic level of what's happening to us as individuals.
I think that's true. I think that what is good about KHOI, with our relatively small budget, is we're unlikely to be bought out by anybody. And what happens, as we saw with our local newspapers, it costs money to buy a newspaper. And to save that money to repay the loan, you lay off staff, which means you have less and less local news, mm-hmm. less and less local reporting, fewer and fewer local photographers. So that one of the reasons people subscribe to local newspapers is high school sports. And if you're not covering those, people aren't going to be that interested in reading the paper at all.
Well, we're just hoping that people can do a sense of assessment that having a community radio station is very valuable, it's very important. Supporting this station financially, it goes hand in hand with, we've made it this far, and here's to the next decade. Hopefully things can grow and prosper, and it's been quite a year, but a lot to look forward to.
Yes, I'm very excited about the new headquarters for KHOI. I like the old headquarters, but the ones you're in now are, frankly, so much better in terms of being able to keep things going.
Well, we're emphasizing, yeah, we're emphasizing sustainability every chance we get, and a good chance to enjoy this with the neighborhood will be September 18th. I think it's becoming more and more official, but we're hoping to have an open house and welcome the community and enjoy the first 10 years, and may there be plenty, plenty more.
Oh, yes, because I certainly hope so, because it's the kind of thing where local people contribute. We contribute money, we contribute time, we can listen, I always listen to local talk because it just, I learned so much about my community. And then I learned so much about basically the soil as with Gene. So it's just, or Alzheimer's, caregiving. These things that affect us all and things we don't necessarily see, but are around us and we need to be aware of.
Well, I'm aware of the fact that you're quite a fixture here at KHOI, Cornelia Flora. Thank you so much for coming on Local Talk, and I'll look forward to seeing you in person. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Local Talk producer Lynn Carey, and thank you, Dennis Hart, for your Monday news summary. And thanks to our guest, Lauren Livingston from the Alzheimer's Association, Gene Eels with the eResources Group, and Cornelia Flora. And thank you, Mike Murphy, for engineering this program, and thank you for all that you do to make KHOI Community Radio what it is. Thank you. I have been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarbaum. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. The other artists you heard were Ferris and Jason Romero, Cannot Change It All, and Sally Ann, the D9 String Band Sauna Sessions. So stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! And Morning Masterpieces with KHOI's own Paul Hertz at 9 a.m. And hoping you have a great week and enjoy some beautiful summer weather in your community. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio. This is KHOI Story City Ames.